Good day. In this episode of Newton Talks, I'm welcoming Will Hill, a media lecturer, to talk about the new Star Wars film, The Rise of Skywalker. Should go without saying, there are spoilers here. So, if you haven't seen the film and you want to see the film, what are you waiting for? And if you're not interested in seeing the film, why are you listening? It needs to be said, both myself and Will are big Star Wars fans, but I do, in this podcast, fall slightly out of alignment and start to slip into kind of ranting mode. No disrespect to the filmmakers or production teams behind Star Wars is meant by this. Please believe me when I say all my criticisms come from a place of love. And in my analysis of Star Wars that you're about to hear, it really is a way of me trying to learn how these guys tell their stories and how this can help me tell better stories myself, either through my filmmaking, which I want to expand and do more of, or through my books about film history. Everything in life is a teacher, and I hope that I have learned something from this process, and I hope you can learn something from this process too. So with that in mind, away we go. So I'm here with Will Hill. We're about to talk about The Rise of Skywalker. We haven't actually discussed how we feel about this film yet. So I'll let you lead off, Will. What were your thoughts on The Rise of Skywalker when you watched it the other day?
I should state that I watched it in a busy, packed cinema. And I don't typically have to swear at people. I always think I'm quite good-natured. But the first thing is I would say is the people in front of me were on their phones, so I ended up swearing at them and telling them to all get out. The people next to me had brought a large pack of like 24 Walker's crisps and were munching away on them. And typically I seem to go somewhere that's quite silent to watch films. So already, like from the first 5-10 minutes, I was watching this with a negative viewpoint, and then the film didn't help to change that.
Yeah. So what was on screen didn't
elevate my mood.
No. Okay. No. So did it make you... So some people, when you go online and read about their reactions to Rise of Skywalker and Star Wars in general, and we'll come to the sequel trilogy, the Skywalker saga, and various other topics later on after we've talked about this specific film. But they can get very angry about The Rise of Skywalker. And I think my viewpoint on it is that virtually every take on Rise of Skywalker, Force Awakens and Last Jedi is accurate. It's like everyone's correct in their assessment of it.
Yeah.
Unless you say they're perfect, in which case that wouldn't be correct. So whatever you're about to say, I can virtually agree with. I can tell you now, I'll almost certainly agree with it.
Which is nice, because last time we had differing opinions about Batman vs. Superman. But yeah.
But I still might have liked the film.
Yes.
But even though you can agree with every single criticism of it, and there obviously just need to be criticism of it, I think.
Yeah, I mean, you look at Force Awakens, I think the main criticism was that all of the ideas seem to be the same as A New Hope, and you're watching the same story. Then the criticisms for Last Jedi were either that the story was basically a slow, very, very slow chase in space, the middle part was Harry Potter, and then what they've done with some of the characters didn't feel accurate to what you're expecting the characters to do, having seen the original trilogy.
Yeah.
And then there is obviously discussion on the third one, on if it's then trying to retcon what happened from Last Jedi, or... And also, we're in the year where Game of Thrones ended, and that you're trying to have a huge story, and you're saying that this is the concluding part to this saga, and you're trying to do it in 2 hours 20, and trying to wrap up too much.
Yeah.
Which is a shame, because then what happens is you've watched this new trilogy, and you think it's going to be a new story, and you've gone, what was the point? Why have you done this? Oh, because Disney want to get their billions of pounds that they paid George Lucas back. But why not tell us a new story? Why not tell us something? And it comes down to, I mean, it's bringing the Emperor back. And you're thinking, oh, what? this is...
So that's the biggest issue, that they're bringing the emperor back. Now, there's a number of ways I think they could have done it, and they did it in the wrong way, right? So firstly, I mean, that's, I read somewhere on Twitter, well, firstly, you don't bring him back at all. Secondly, have him in it from the start. He could have been Snoke from the start, right? He could not, I mean, just get rid of Snoke and you just take the place of Snoke.
Yeah.
Or there's an interesting idea when they said in the new one, Rise of Skywalker, when they say there's been like an echo across the galaxy or something like that. I like, why not in the first two movies have that echo across the galaxy, right? So we can hear what, when we just tease the idea of it. Well, we know the answer to the question is they hadn't fucking planned this out at all. Now, right, they planned it out that it was always going to be Palpatine, in which case it's fucking rank incompetence that they didn't mention that in the first two movies, right? Because especially the way they announce him in the opening crawl, they don't even have any suspense. He's there, oh, he's back, right? Or they didn't plan it out, in which case that's unbelievable to me that they did not plan out the this movie by movie. It boggles the mind.
Absolutely, I could, like, the thought process of, so you know that George Lucas has sold it with his idea of how a trilogy, the next trilogy, the concluding part is. Like, yeah. He's overseen it, but obviously trust in him is perhaps not at its strongest after the last trilogy. But they buy his screenplay when they get it, and he's, you know, thinks that they're going to consider it.
Yeah.
And then I think they have a big boardroom meeting at some stage, and he's there, and they read what they want to do for Force Awakens, and he gets disappointed.
Right.
And apparently they always have an ending. This is what I've read. There is always some way of ending it. Now, if that ending is the Emperor returns, Rey is doing this, or if that ending is Rey is exactly watching the initial two sons, and it's just that visual, I don't know. But I completely agree, the incompetence level is ridiculous, because just in terms of storytelling, and I don't think that they do have that clear ending, because you read how they picked three different directors, and then they get rid of Colin Trevorrow, who was doing the Jurassic World stuff. They get rid of him after the Book of Henry, I think it was a flop, and who knows what else. But they get rid of him, and Rian Johnson's done his one, which is polarising, get J.J. Abrahams back involved, and in terms of turnaround times, I think he comes back involved in like 2016, 2017, and they get rid of Colin Trevorrow's script. They don't want to use his one at all, and then they get Chris, I don't know the pronunciation of the surname, Chris Terro to be this writer and screen director who wrote Argo. Then after Argo writes Batman vs. Superman and Justice League. Two huge stinkers.
One huge stinker, but fair.
Yeah. But again, like...
Not a well-liked film.
Not
well,
yeah,
I agree.
And perhaps they bring him in because he wrote those in an incredible amount of time. Perhaps. And they're working to the same conflict and issues that Bond often suffers with, that you know when your release is, and you're making changes and you're sacking people and you're going, right, this still needs to come out. But by God, it's shit. Especially when you know that you've got this huge universe and you're just telling the same story.
So what are you saying Rise of Skywalker shit or the new sequel trilogy?
Both. Unnecessary. And I love, I have the thing that I always had as a young boy where I absorb something and I go, oh, do you know what, I want to watch more of it. So even though I didn't like the stuff with the Clone Wars, I went out and watched the animated series and got all into it. And
which apparently is quite good.
The animated series, yeah. There are different arcs, and some arcs are really strong, but far better than the actual films. And I'll go and absorb it. This hasn't made me go, I want to absorb more Star Wars stuff. And often when Force Awakens came out, even though I thought, oh, I'd seen all that, I was really excited for what they were going to do. Yeah. Thinking, do you know what? I like the characters, I'm invested, I don't like that it told me the same story, but they've got this whole universe, they've got this whole world. At least with the Clone Wars trilogy, they say that this is a huge universe. Look at all these different planets. Like, there's actually a wealth of material they can build on here. They don't really do that. The best thing it did was kind of show you that puppetry can be useful and interesting over CG.
It was nice, I think, to Force Awakens. I like the Force Awakens. I feel probably a lot softer towards the sequel trilogy than you do. I'm far more sympathetic. But one thing I liked about The Force Awakens, even though I can see why people thought it was a reach of A New Hope, it was just great to see the aesthetic of the kind of like models. Even if some of it was CGI, it looked like an old Star Wars film.
Absolutely.
Back to the old Stormtroopers, back to the TIE Fighters, back to the same design of the kind of ships and the Imperial. And that was fantastic. And I love seeing that after coming from the prequel trilogy.
Absolutely.
The design of that was horrid.
Yeah, visually, some stuff. I mean, even in this one, when you've got people... you've got Finn piloting, or not piloting, but getting out the guns early on, and they're doing the light speed jump and jump and jump, and he gets up the kind of the gun viewpoint, and it looks exactly as it that stuff is great.
Yeah.
And visually, there are so many moments, particularly in The Last Jedi, where you're like, this is pure Star Wars, but visually, even like just, you know, from 10 to 11, you're there watching it going, oh, look at this red room, look at these guards, and that initial bit with the bomb dropping down, like, there are so many moments, and Rey standing off against Luke, where you're like, this is just pure wallpaper on my computer, this is the moment of Star Wars that I want. And I thinking back to The Last Jedi, I've got Rey walking into that room with the blue light to see the Emperor, mm-hmm. It's like going, oh, this looks visually...
In Snoke, in Last Jedi, Rise of Skywalker.
Rise of Skywalker, apologies. Yeah. Walking in his bit underneath. And I don't know what else. I sort of go visually, that's great.
There's not a lot that's great to look at. There's two good shots. I mean, it's maybe a predictable final shot of Rey against the kind of binary sunset, but I thought, okay, fair enough, that's okay. It's one of the most iconic shots in there, and it's quite nice with the kind of sun haze as well. You've got that, and there's a really good shot of the Knights of Ren, who turned out to be a fucking crushing disappointment. But they look the business in terms of the way they're dressed, and when they're on top of that rock,
and then you've got the aerial shot going around.
Yeah,
and then though, because of that's another thing that this film does a lot. It builds you up. And you're there waiting, oh, they brought the Knights of Ren back. This has been mentioned in The Force Awakens. This is going to be, they're going to be sort of sent out as scouts or something, and then they're going to start chopping a couple of people. You know, like Lord of the Rings, when you see the initial first film, you've got the guys on the horses chasing, and there's a really threat, like foreboding presence to them. And then Rey's taking on all of them with like looking like Han Solo's pistol kind of thing to hand, until he gets his lightsaber, but that's it. But yeah, that aerial shot makes you think there is so much more to these guys.
I mean, Star Wars has got form in this, in that it introduces Boba Fett and then throws him away in Return of the Jedi, to the point where you have to kind of like, they have to create a lore around Boba Fett and even make the Mandalorian, which is not Boba Fett, but it's trades on the similar iconography of the armour and stuff like that. He looks cool. Mm. And Darth Maul, right? Who they just bring in and jettison. They've got form in throwing away really good, brilliantly designed visual characters who look fantastic, you know. I mean, something like Boba in Darth Maul, I always thought, well, what? He should have survived. And then, I know he does survive, and he's brought back in the Clone Wars. But he should have survived at the end of Phantom Menace, and he'd gone to be the continual villain that keeps cropping up.
Absolutely.
So when they have the final showdown in the third one, it's, you know, then you have to invent the General Grievous character in Revenge of the Sith, who's a great character, looks fantastic, but he's introduced and then offed straight away. And I know the Clone Wars and the animated, the little kind of short anime series as well, that kind of explored some of these characters in an interesting way. So it's okay to have the expanded universe and the I understand that, the kind of transmedia aspect of it. I get it, and it's good, and I like it. But I also wish the films would be better in and of themselves and use the characters.
Yeah, especially when you then watch these characters going on these kind of adventures and journeys, and you're kind of like, I've seen all this, and they're doing stuff that's so mundane and so kind of paint by numbers, right? So go here, collect that bit, and then go here. Whereas by now, I don't really want to watch Rey and Finn and Poe, because I know that they're doing this little treasure map, collecting, like, I'm not interested. I'm interested in these other characters that you're giving me. I know you can't build the story around it, but then perhaps give me a more interesting story with Ray, Poe, and Finn than just we'll go from A, we'll go to B, and then we'll go like.
But it's still possible because, I mean, for example, Darth Vader in A New Hope, he's not a wasted character. He's not a wasted character because they don't kill him off in a stupid way. Don't throw him away. They kept him alive. The one thing that they did was kept him alive. Because remember, of course, it's not Episode 4 A New Hope, is it? Originally, it's Star Wars, right? So they kept him alive. They did the right thing. And you don't feel kind of starved of his presence in that film, right? You don't have to have lots of the character in it. I think you just have to maximise the character that's there. You know, in the same way that the reason why Oddjob is such an iconic villain in Goldfinger is because they maximise absolutely everything they can out of Oddjob. He's not in the film very much, but he was an iconic character, or you know, he's an iconic villain, right? And I don't think they do that with the Knights of Ren. I mean, it's a really potentially interesting climax. I like that bit with Ben Solo, Kylo Ren, when she kind of projects this lightsaber into his hand after he's been beaten up, and now he's going to turn the tables. It's good, right?
And he does a brief sort of smile and a look.
It's good. Yeah. But it's just that kind of subsequent fight isn't quite as exciting as you wanted to be. It's a bit too perfunctory, right? You just need to see those got the Knights of Ren doing some action. You don't really. I mean, they do look fantastic. Whoever's designed them has done a real good job, but they don't look all that great. And it would be nice to see them doing some, actually looking dangerous and actually, you know, killing some rebels.
Absolutely.
You know.
And I think on your characters that are there but not fully explored, with the Snoke character, I created him and then seeing him in like a tube, and that's all you kind of get and need. And that felt very lazy.
Yeah. Because that's the point. I'm going to utterly pointless. And the first thing that struck my mind with all this, going back to the Palpatine nonsense, right, is that I had no problem with him down playing Palpatine. I think he played it brilliantly.
Absolutely.
And I thought the Palpatine scenes aren't bad as such as it's the whole thing. You're thinking, well, what's going on and why?
Yep.
And you know, if Palpatine can, I mean, Snoke, to my knowledge, right, I know the ship probably blew up at the end of Last Jedi, but he's still got a body, right? Why can't he bring himself back? Right, it was like Palpatine doesn't have anything at the end of Return of the Jedi. He blows up down a shaft or whatever happened. So how is he? All right, fair enough. There's some kind of dark force. I can accept all that business that he can come back. And I know in one of the stories in the Expanded Universe novels, I know he comes back in one of those in some form or other. So I know it's been done before in a more expansive way, in more expanded universe, but. It just feels like an add-on. It feels like it's tacked on here so bad because Snoke dies in Last Jedi.
Yeah.
And then that's all it is, let's be honest. And we know it is. And even if that's not what it is, that's what it looks like.
That's absolutely. And then they say stuff like, oh, the using the sort of Boba Fett character going, oh, well, you don't need to know why the Emperor is still alive. It's because he just is. That's you didn't know. Need to know why he was a bounty hunter. And then when they do go and tell you actually who Jango Fett is and the creation of Boba Fett, you go like, oh,
yeah.
And I know, like I've heard that they go in that viewpoint.
Yeah.
But when it's as big as this is supposed to be an entire trilogy,
and
this is the overriding baddie,
and then
they say stuff like, oh, well, he needed to be in there because he's always been the Skywalker's true villain. Just feels again tacked on rather than, like you say, from Force Awakens, this is the story, he needs to be there.
Yeah,
well, the first very, shot,
the very
or the first the crawl of the of Force Awakens,
yeah,
then being
exactly on the crawl of the Force Awakens, it could have worked. You know, the reason why the First Order is coming back is because they heard an echo, or not coming back, but being created, is because they heard an echo across the galaxy that Palpatine might still be around. Around there, that sounds like a good idea to me. And then, emboldened by that, the old Empire starts to
because when watching The Force Awakens, you're like, you've decided that everything that happened in Return of the Jedi was pointless. All those people who died, all of the ships blowing out of the sky was for nothing because it's back. But now it seems even bigger than before.
Yeah.
And how has this happened? How have you gotten to this stage so quickly? And then it was called the First Order, and now it's called the Last Order. It's like so lazy.
Final Order.
And then the scene where you have see the ships that they've got.
Yeah.
Whoever was sort of copy paste computer whiz guy, just dial it back. Like if there were 10 of those, and they show you the scene of it blowing up a planet.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you're like, that's impressive. 10 would have been fine.
Yeah.
But there looks like there's thousands of them.
Yeah.
And I'm going back to kind of Clerks territory. But the infrastructure needed from technicians, plumbers, electricians to be working on it just seems ridiculous.
And who's staffing all this?
Catering.
And, I mean, are the Sith troopers, which look good by the way, are they clones? Who the fuck are they? In fact, they mentioned earlier on in the film, and I didn't pick this up until I saw it the second time. Here I am criticising the film, more for me. I've actually been and watched it twice, but you know, I'm a Star Wars fan. Is they mention we're going to have to expand the kind of recruitment, but the Final Order, they're in a board meeting with Kylo Ren talking about expanding the kind of recruitment. We're going to go to new territories to pick out the young, to staff all the... Well, how quick does that happen?
Hmm.
Right? So, and also there's a real kind of problem in that, you know, they establish in that stormtroopers are basically child soldiers who've been picked up. Yeah, we think nothing of just slaughtering them en masse, right? There's no mass rebellion of stormtroopers, right? What's wrong? I mean, it just seems to be... As soon as you scratch... The film cannot handle this level of scrutiny.
Mm.
And the problem, I think, with the sequel trilogy is it just opens up too many... I mean, I don't mind the fact that you've got one rogue stormtrooper, Finn, fine. Right, but then you've got a whole host of other ones that they meet in this film, and it just draws a question mark over the whole thing. The whole thing becomes incredibly sad.
Yeah,
you know that there's like so much. Maybe I'm taking it too seriously, but so much death and destruction, and for what?
Yep.
And for the establishment at the end of Return of the Jedi is a happy galaxy. At the end of Rise of Skywalker, I know it doesn't seem that happy. You could see a couple of Ewoks that look in the sky and see what happens.
Well, it doesn't feel happy because you know that in 30 years the Emperor's back with 10,000 ships.
Whereas
before it was dealt and done with.
Yeah.
And now it's like, you know, Superman coming back, it's just a money spinner.
There's no consequences. And worst of all, I can accept it if they'd have done it all the way, if it had been clearly the plan from the start to bring you all the way through, because it's really, I think it does come across as lazy. I think saying all that, and we can talk about Last Jedi in a minute briefly, and Force Awakens, just to wrap this bit up when we talk about the sequel trilogy. But saying all that, I do get a kick out of watching these films, right? And I think there's certain, you know, I love the design of it. I love the kind of, I want to like it more than perhaps I do. Right? There's certain things. I did think that C-3PO was actually very, very funny and had some very, very funny lines. You don't look convinced.
Maybe lightly chuckle at one point.
Maybe I'm more easily impressed by that. But I thought he had some funny lines. I thought they dealt with C-3PO a bit fat. Since the end of Return of the Jedi, that's the best he's been dealt with. C-3PO, he actually had something to do.
Yeah, I mean the initial purpose. Clunky of, because it's a huge universe, and then Anakin made him.
Yeah.
Like, come on.
I don't like their presence in the prequel trilogy at all. I don't mind the odd cameo in there of things. I can.
But in shrinking the universe,
the very fact that it's called the Skywalker Saga now. It was never called the fucking Skywalker. What now? It's called the Skywalker Saga. It's really, and people talked about. I mean, I'm going on a rant here. I invited you in, Will, but man, it's just been me talking the whole time. But I need to say this: when people talked about how brave it was for Rian Johnson to bring in the fact that anybody can be a Force user in Last Jedi, I thought, oh, that's always been the fucking case. If you look, it's always been the case. It's never just been the Skywalkers. At the first start, to its credit, the one thing the prequel trilogy does, it shows you how many people can be Jedis. Yeah. And I know it's got the midichlorians thing, but that's because Anakin's supposed to bring balance to the Force, right? So he's just a special case. Whereas the rest of them, they're like different from different races, different aliens, different from different parts of the galaxy, and they can use the Force in different
ways. Yeah.
And Rogue One has got that in, because you've got the Donnie Yen character who's a Force user, but he never got a chance to become a Jedi, so he's strong with the Force and he can fight, but he's not. He's never grown to be a Jedi,
yep.
Like, presumably, like Leia didn't. Presumably, like Ray hasn't, and presumably like Luke would have been had he not completed his training with however he completed his training between Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi, Yoda presumably, right? So that was always the thing, that anyone could be a Force user. It's not, that wasn't radical or anything unusual.
No, and now there's the whole big thing of Broom Boy.
Yeah,
there was always
people who were more sensitive with the Force and ability to use the Force, right? That was purely the point, right?
Well, it's the whole balance. And if Palpatine has returned and is getting stronger, you would imagine there would be others.
Yeah, and that's fine. That could be Rey, but they don't make that point explicit. And they could have made, that's the purpose of this sequel. The sequel trilogy. Is they don't, what they don't get right is basic storytelling, which is this, you know, that old maxim: if you introduce a gun in Act One, you need to use it in Act Three, right? And there's too many kind of Deus Ex Machina plot devices where all of a sudden Rey can beat Kylo Ren in a lightsaber fight in Force Awakens. Fine, if we know earlier on that she's this powerful in the, but we don't, so it's a massive surprise. And then okay, I can just about buy the fact that Leia can magic herself out of space and bring herself back to life, if we know already that she's a massive Force user, and she made it to Jedi status thanks to, because she was trained by her brother, right? But not just bring this stuff out of nowhere and just to throw it in, and now Palpatine's back and he was behind it all along. To do it three times is really, I think it's incompetent. I mean, I'm not saying I'm no better as a storyteller, of course I'm not. But these people are getting paid billions to do this stuff. I mean, the amount of money and effort that's gone into this for it to be this monumentally weak on a narrative.
Yeah, level. And I think a lot of it has to... You've got people who are researching, and, you know, since the first Star Wars has come out, there are so many... You know, Jedi's a religion, and there's so many, like, the Wikipedia sites, and...
Yeah.
There's masses of people like sort of explaining, and then there's comics and there's TV series and there's novels, and some of it has been dismissed by Disney since they bought it. It's not canon anymore. So some people are entering it with all this knowledge and like, of course Leia can do this.
Mm-hmm.
But these are blockbuster films that are seen by perhaps just the movie audience, mm-hmm. who shouldn't have to do all of that background research to watch it.
No.
You should perhaps get a bit more,
yeah,
if you're watching it, but it shouldn't then not make sense.
No.
Where you just left jaw dropped going, what am I saying? Yeah. Why is this?
Especially since in the opening crawl, they could easily have said General Leia Organa is now a Jedi. All it needs. In Force Awakens, right? Or something. You need to be more poetic than that, but something. Just to, and then that's fine.
Yeah.
Then we know.
You're establishing the rules.
Then we're establishing the rules, right? It's when they don't establish the rules, and I'm, you know, it's just. I think that's the problem with it, really. And I think that this one in particular, Rise of Skywalker suffers from that. And in some respects, it has to. And he's had a lot of criticism online, actually, J.J. Abrams, and they've said for not picking up the baton that Rian Johnson set down in Last Jedi. And I think to a certain, you know, there's certain narrative threads he hasn't followed, certain characters like the Rose character that he hasn't really picked up and done more with. And I think that's it's a fair criticism, if you like it as a criticism. I will say, in fairness to J.J. Abrams, Rian Johnson didn't do any of that with his character. So he was quite happy to throw away Snoke and quite happy to throw away all this stuff. And it's very easy to come along and be the middle section and to do mad, wacky stuff when you're not the one who has to conclude it, right? So at the same time, and I think another criticism I would throw, and not throw at The Last Jedi, but say that it's there's a kind of like a revisionist way of thinking about it, as if it's some form of masterpiece now. Whereas it's important to say that Rian Johnson himself doesn't pick up those narrative threads that he introduces, because when Snoke's dead and Kylo Ren holds his hand out to Rey, she should have taken him, or he should have gone on to her. It should have ended with them together,
yeah,
either with her on the dark side or him with the rebels and having to build a relationship with his mom, even though he's killed his dad and everyone hates him.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So the status quo is assumed very, very quickly after that point, after Snoke's dead. So Rian Johnson doesn't do it.
Yeah.
And I have to say at this point, I do think that's the I still think Last Jedi's the best film of the new trilogy. I think it's got the most stunning moments.
Yeah.
I think it looks the best. And
absolutely.
I think it's got the moments that are the most joyful. The throne room scene.
It's spectacular.
Brilliant stuff. The lightsaber battle. And all the stuff beforehand with Snoke. Snoke's really good. Andy Serkis, he's a master actor. He's a brilliant actor. Right? I mean, I know Ian McDermott's a good actor as well, but you know, we've seen him do that, all that stuff before, and he's great in the prequel trilogy, really. He's him coming to be Palpatine. He does a very good job. You don't really need to see him again. He doesn't do anything new. Whereas Andy Serkis is a really good actor, and it was...
an interesting character.
Yeah, I think Snoke's... Where was Snoke's backstory would have been interesting, I think, you know. And it'd be far more sense to first... If you wanted to pull out the Rey's, Palpatine's granddaughter, for Rey to be Snoke's granddaughter, because we don't know anything about Snoke...
Yep.
Whereas we do know something about Palpatine, and we, where's his? Why aren't his children force sensitive? Why is it skipped a generation?
Yeah.
I don't. That's the thing. That, I mean, I suppose it skips a generation in the Vader to Kylo Ren thing because it's all. But I mean, maybe there's something in that. But maybe tell me what that is, right? So I understand. So I'm not filling in the gaps. You know, so yeah.
But there's things again. Thinking of like narrative and structure, and the passing the baton on that you say. Like, so the end, the whole point and the ending is of The Last Jedi is that no one turned up, but they did enough to ignite the spark. But they didn't. No one turned up. And then loosely in this one, Poe kept getting informed by people they'll turn up, but the amount that turn up and they've not done anything. To sort of get this huge spark, that I just couldn't get on board with and believe. When you suddenly have this fleet of thousands of ships, and you're like, well, no one bothered before when the first, last, dying order were hardly anything on the visually pleasant sand planet.
Yeah, crazy.
They could have stopped them there.
Yeah, and that's a fantastic scene.
It is a great scene.
I've no problem with that in Last Jedi because. They don't turn up. It's quite a good. Well, no one turned up. What are we going to do?
Yeah,
right. That's quite a good.
But then to suddenly go, oh, we've still got. But everyone's on board now.
Everyone's on board now,
and not giving again, not giving you a reason why,
and not give. There's nothing's changed.
No,
you know, nothing's
Lando's
changed.
On board.
Lando's on board. Yeah, I mean it's good to see him back. He's quite good. I mean, back to the stuff that I liked. Right, there's some bits that are good. I think Lando's quite good. I did like the scene with Han Solo coming back. You know, and he's having the chat with Ben Solo. Even if I'm sensing potentially that you have some you have an alternative viewpoints on that. I liked it, right? And because it was a replaying of obviously the scene where he murders Han Solo. I thought it's an alternative to that. And I thought that was quite heartbreaking. He looks back and after he's thrown his lightsaber away and his dad's not there. I thought that's quite emotional. And of course, but then you're talking about Harrison Ford, who's a great movie star, and Adam Driver, who's a brilliant actor.
Yeah, no
and he's brilliant in this. In fact, I like all the cast. I've got no problem with the cast in any of these films.
Didn't like casting wise is Dominic Monaghan.
Yeah,
just because you've spent so much time with him in Lord of the Rings,
he stood out.
And Hattie Wainthrop Investigates, that you're there going, "Where's Hyacinth Bouquet? And where's Frodo?" Like even Richard E. Grant, I didn't mind because I'm used to him being.
Yeah, I thought he was quite good.
And yeah, you're like, oh yeah, that makes.
But
sense.
But again, he should have been in. First film, he should have been in Force Awakens.
Yeah,
and then they kind of because they ruined the Dom Gleason character, which Ryan Johnson ruined him in the last one, you know, and so you just have to throw him away in this one because he's useless now, and he's the fucking spy and he gets him out, but he's only doing it just to get back at Kylo Ren in some petty.
And then swaps and would have been on side. And they
would have been on his side anyway. I mean, Kylo Ren's on his side anyway.
And there's too many of that in these series. Again, I've not watched The Force Awakens for a year or so, so that one I can't say. But there's too many of these kind of moments where, like, if Rose and Finn don't go on the journey, then they're not found out for the spaceship and no one dies. And then in this one, same kind of thing, where if people would actually just tool down for a moment, have a discussion, everyone's all right.
Yeah. It happens too many times, and I mind narrative incoherence, you know. I genuinely don't, and I'm not clever enough, right?
to point out a lot of this stuff. But within a second of going online, you've got people pointing out the illogicality. That's okay to a certain degree. I think it was Roger Corman used to refer to it as the kind of the fridge moment. He says, if you can get people, you know, they're watching the film, they don't think anything's wrong. They go for a meal afterwards, then the beer afterwards, they don't think anything's wrong. They go home, they feel a bit peckish before bed. They walk to the fridge, open the fridge, and then think, oh, I am wrong. And that, if you can get them to that point, then it's fine, right? And so most of it is like that. But there's too many where it's all it would have taken was somebody in the writer's room to pick this up. I mean, Roger Corman, it's one person writing it and he has to deliver a draft in a couple of weeks. Whereas this is they're throwing billions at it, right? And it's the biggest franchise on earth. So it feels a little bit weak coming from Disney.
Yeah.
You know, I think, you know, in a Star Wars film.
Absolutely. You know? And I think just knowing that it's a trilogy and knowing that, like I was saying earlier, so they've got Chris Tira to help with the writing, but you've got each one has got different people writing it. So there isn't a clear vision.
No.
Like, yes, you've got J.J. Abrahams directing one and two, but he wasn't the sole writer on the first one.
No.
The writing,
three,
Yeah. And that there are just different, like, they are different ideas. Like, the only plot strand is that characters dislike each other then come on board again.
Yeah.
And I know that Star Wars, the very first one, is the most basic of, you know, if you look at narrative theory,
it's the best, in my opinion.
And there's just some of the symbolism has been lost that you've got with that. And then the decisions like, I will wear the helmet again, I won't wear the helmet again.
Yeah.
Like, you brought that back for some merchandise?
Yeah.
Or you brought that, like,
people are saying there's a new Disney ride in some, I'm presuming it's Disneyland.
Disney World.
It's Star Wars ride.
Yep.
And Kylo Ren's in it. Right. So obviously, it's easier if they can use anybody to be Kylo Ren
with the mask on.
I mean, that's a particularly cynical way of thinking about it. I have to say, when I first saw Force Awakens, I thought, God, what a fucking brilliant character. And I was massively disappointed when he took his helmet off. I would have probably just keep his helmet on. I mean, you're talking about a different film there. But he looks fantastic. He's got a great voice. I bought him wholesale as a Sith.
I remember seeing the first one.
He looks amazing.
Like, talking about, like, annoying audiences. This I didn't mind. There was a fairly young girl, say 8, 9, probably too young to be watching this, and just, like, screamed when he was on with Christopher Plummer at the beginning, like, in the, like, his voice in it, and I was like, yeah, he's legit terrifying. And then you sort of get to know the character, and there's the scene where he when he storms out and the other guys are about to walk into the room with him,
and they turn back,
you're like, that's enough tongue in cheek that the Star Wars trilogy has always had. And it's as threatening and menacing and foreboding as he should be.
And at that point, he's doing stuff. At that point, he's stopping the blaster shot in midair and stuff. He's doing stuff that we haven't seen.
Yep. I think in terms of this trilogy, he's the best, most interesting story arc.
No question. And that's as good as anything in the Star. I mean, that's the what I would say. I would go as far as to say, in terms of the level of acting, the story arc, you know, it's as good as anything in any Star Wars, right? In terms of, you know, if you can isolate just his scenes. Right? If you can isolate Adam Driver's scenes, I think he's probably the best thing in the entire Skywalker saga, which we're calling it now.
Yeah.
Right? You know, I think it is.
And it's such a shame that it's the Skywalker.
Yeah.
Why can't it be its own? I don't think I'd be as disappointed and frustrated if it was, and this whole thing that we've wrapped up, like, I don't know when you saw it, if it was in all cinemas, but this, before the film started, you get this, like, thank you to all the fans and, like, this kind of celebration clip saying it's been an emotional... It's been this emotional journey we've all been on. And they're going, yeah, it has, but I know it's not going to end. I know Disney, Ryan Johnson is making a trilogy, The Mandalorian's on TV.
Yeah.
Why did this film have to be the concluding part? So what, if Rey has any kids and she's now called Skywalker, she's not going to call them. Yeah. Then the lineage does continue.
Yeah, right.
Or what? Because you've killed them. Like, and that's, I think, where it becomes. Why did it have to be this ending? Like, this, we're going to make sure it's complete. and say that we're going to wrap stuff up. And again, going back to the narrative and the planning, if you look at the last two Avengers films, there's definite planning within it, because you look at that, how that one ends, and then you look at Return of the Jedi, how it ends with Han Solo being, you know, frozen in the carbonite, and how
Empire Strikes Back,
apologies, and then with Thanos doing the snap in the Marvel thing, right? It's not just a pass the baton on, we've got no idea. You've clearly got this is how, and picking it up with the story where you're just watching it.
Well, the MCU, they seem to have planned a lot of this. I mean, I'm not a massive fan of them, I don't know them, but they seem to, every film seems to build, even if it's just in the post-credit sequence, right? They seem to add on to that. They lead you into the next phase, right? The next, maybe the phase is the wrong word because that's a specific thing in that. Yeah. But like, lead you on to the next film or introduces a new character into it. And it seems to kind of sense of, well, there's how many films? 20 films? I don't know. But there's a plan through pretty much all of them, I believe.
Yeah.
Right? Or it seems relatively coherent. Right, it's leading up to something. In this, it's really weak, and I think, you know, maybe it doesn't help with the fact that it has to, they're stuck with the three films. The first was a trilogy, and there's a trilogy of. Why have we got to do three more? Why not do four more?
Yeah,
I don't know what's stopping it. I don't know what is. It just seems to be. I mean, we're lamenting here, right? Maybe it's just. The whole thing seems to be a massive missed opportunity, you know. So before we move on to talking about other elements of Star Wars, was there anything you did like about the apart from Adam Driver and Kylo Ren? Is there anything you like about what did you like about Rise of Skywalker?
I think you're right in that all the characters are okay. Everyone's, I don't want to just say okay. Like, I'd watch it again. I think I'm just like, it's that thing of going into the film and having anticipation, like a expectancy and wanting something and just being like, oh, that's not what I wanted. Mm-hmm. It's not a terrible film, and I earlier said it was shit. It's not shit. It's just like, you know, if I watched something and was expecting it to be terrible, then I go, oh, that was great.
Yeah.
So I am probably bad-mouthing it more.
Yeah. And there's also an element, isn't there, where like I'm a huge James Bond film. I've probably seen the shittest James Bond film more times than I've seen my favourite film, right? It's like, because I like it despite the fact that it's rubbish.
Yeah, so right. I'll clarify that. But, and then there are small things, so like they've clearly thought about ending, like I said, with the sunset for Luke's story, and at the same time she does the slide down that she does when she's about to begin her journey. Like, there are things that they've thought about.
Yeah, I like that bit.
I'm sure I've got more good things to say.
I like the stuff with the waves coming over. I thought that was design of that was
nice.
Yeah, that's what I did like, and I wish it would have been there from the beginning of the trilogy, like I said, but I didn't mind Palpatine's hideout and all those like acolytes and the millions of people his followers.
Yeah, he's got a robot arm attached to him. Again, that looked...
I like the fact that he's got the big statues there. It's like, I don't know, it's just some Sith palace, and there's like the Sith people who just follow this, like a big cult. Oh, that was potentially quite interesting. You know, they're kind of killed a bit too easily. There's no reason why they all have to die and get crushed. Want to have them alive, right?
Yeah.
Maybe I think that's the trilogy in 5 years' time.
Yeah.
Right?
Like, you're telling the exact same story when you've got so many characters and so many things that are interesting. You suddenly show this temple.
Mm-hmm.
Why not have, you know, a story about these kind of people, the baddies doing something, or just spending a bit more time watching this uprising, or rather than it's here and
now it's gone.
Three people are going to save the day. You've seen it once. It's returns. But yeah, maybe the second time I'll go, I won't be so disappointed, and I'll be able to say all the things I like. But
I was more disappointed the second time. Actually, I think there's not a lot of depth to this film at all. It wasn't like a case of there's things that I'd missed after watching it the first time, and then picking them up the second time. In fact, there was less going on the second time I watched it than there was. In fact, it felt more shallow the second time than it was the first time. Now, sometimes in films like that, big franchise films, especially if you love the lore and the everything around it, something like a Bond film or a Star Wars film, you can enjoy it far more the second time. You can relax into it. You know you're not going to be wrong-footed too badly, and so you can really enjoy the kind of nuances. I thought it was a lot shallower than even the second time around.
Nothing happened. Kind of.
No, not in that. And I don't mind that type of stuff. I like pork more than I like anything else. I would prefer it all to be that.
Yeah.
But it's got the action sequences aren't good enough to sustain the we move from one adventure to the next aspect of it, right? I think there's no real excuse for having so much stuff at the start of the film going to you could have, there's so much story and emotion to get through that you really could just have to skip to the, it is all about Rey and Kylo Ren, that's it. It's unfortunate that they have to join together to fight somebody who's just come out of nowhere. The rest of the guys could have just been drumming up business to go and fight the Final Order, right? I mean, the First Order don't even know about the Final Order. We talk about them, how crappy it is all day, can't we? You know, the First Order don't even know anything about the Final Order.
Yeah.
You know, and there's really one telling moment, and it's the bit that, you know, it's a bit I did like, but again, it also speaks to the missed opportunity. It's when Richard E. Grant's character, and I can't remember his, General Pride, I think his name is, and he's on his knees in front of the Emperor, the hologram of the Emperor, and he says something along the lines of, I'll serve you now than the way I served you in the Galactic Wars or whatever the last
battle was.
And I thought, really nice, how great it would have been to see this from the start or from a character from the original, do you know what I mean, to come back and do it, and you know, and Richard E. Grant's a great actor anyway, and he plays it really well, and he looks good and all that type of stuff, but it just spoke to the very missed opportunity that you had, because you always have these two things with Star Wars. You've got the kind of the spiritual kind of metaphysical stuff, and then you've got the space hardware battle stuff, and then they often intersect against each other, you cut back and forth between them, and it just, I don't think this film did it in a particularly effective, I don't think it's that good in terms of the way it puts it together. It's way too rushed. And the action's not that good. It's not that exciting when they have that chase on that desert planet. It's the final dogfight isn't that good. You know, when they have that with the Star Destroyers, it's not exciting. No. It's pretty good in the end of The Last Jedi when that battle. It's quite good on the salt planet.
Yeah, because it's doing something new. And it looks with the red.
Yeah.
Again, I completely agree, guys.
And there's a bit in that Last Jedi when the Millennium Falcon joins in and the Star Wars battle theme kind of starts, and it's like, all of a sudden it's and Kylo Ren says, you know, blow that ship out of the sky, and Finn says, oh, they really hate that ship, whatever. You know, and it's like, all of a sudden it starts to be, the film really lifts and it's fun, and it's like, this is like a good Star Wars film. There's nothing really in this that does that. There's stuff that should have looked fantastic that doesn't.
Yep.
There's characters you've got how many of the six Knights of Ren which look beautiful, and they're just dismissed in a way that's very, you know, it's all shot in mid shot. They're all killed in mid shot.
Yeah.
Right. None of it looks iconic. Right. And it's and so I was a bit more disappointed the second time.
And thinking of things being iconic, if you think of it, so look, it's John Williams' score again.
Yeah.
And it's all over it, and it's telling you the story. You can close your eyes and it will tell you the story, which all John Williams does. But if you think of the first three, that's a quick story. My friend of mine got married, and the stepmom completely took over the wedding. So when she was walking down...
You don't want to name any names.
I'm not going to name any names. Right. When she was walking down the aisle, the stepmom, he changed the music to... da 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 da. I can't think, apart from the Leia music, which plays a lot, of like iconic music by, like within this, where you're selling close your eyes. Like,
no, that's true. Yeah.
That's really like taken over.
Yeah.
And I think that's a real shame because, even the Darth Maul stuff with the
Duel of the Fates. Yeah,
brilliant.
Yeah, it's good.
Like I've got that in my head now, which makes that a better film than it should be. But that isn't happening in this.
No, I think a lot of it is down to the pacing, because it's cut so quick to the bone. They just have to move. Well, we have to kill the Knights of Ren because we've got to do this. We've got to shoot over there. There's no time to like let the scenes play out. So everything's truncated to a very, very short space of time, really. You know, so we have to kill the. We can't like, you know, take our time over this battle because we just got to get to the end of it. Or, you know, we've got to fit four more showings in on a day. Right? It's like we can't let it go over 2 hours 20 or whatever. It might be 2 hours 4. I don't know how long it is.
No, you're right.
Whatever it is, it's not long enough and too long. It's one of those films. It's too long and not long enough at the same time.
Absolutely. And I mean, there's been lots this weekend about almost in a similar way to. Justice League, yeah. With the release of the Snyder Cut now, and release the Abrahams cut.
Yeah, yeah.
So there's talks that he's, you know, got X amount of stuff and that they were editing on the day because of the time pressures, because like we were saying, changing of writers, changing of directors, and that they were
but like
you say, the beginning, most of it doesn't need to be there. Cut to the story of what we're actually seeing. Give us... Get rid of the chaff.
Yeah.
Give us the story.
Yeah.
Just I think it's good. It's poorly written and rushed. Yeah. It feels like a first draft.
Yes, absolutely, it does. And trying to do everything that they did before, whilst also trying to do something new to wrap up a kind of 9 episode. Yeah. And it's just it can't sustain itself.
No, and it doesn't. It maybe didn't need to do that.
No, it didn't need to do that.
You know, the stuff that I was always interested in that it doesn't do. Always from A New Hope was Alec Guinness saying, "If you strike me down, I'll come." I've always been waiting for that moment.
Yeah.
That's the thing that I've been like, that's the most like, when's he gonna come back and be? And you're like, oh, Force Ghost. They're all about to stand behind her, and apparently now it's saying on Twitter that may have been shot.
Because they just have the voices, don't they?
They just have the voices, but apparently they were there, and the Hayden Christensen was there, and
Samuel L. Jackson,
yeah, were actually there, and it was filmed. Who knows if that's people, you know, on Reddit sort of saying that or truth? But that is what I want to see. I want to see Alec Guinness suddenly going like, "Well, now I'm, you know, ridiculously."
Because if that's not shot. Why hasn't he been shot?
And also, if you're going to show so many, like you say, Yoda as a Force Ghost, you show Luke as a, and he's now able to catch and interact with the world.
Yeah.
So he could definitely turn up and help.
Yeah.
This is a moment where, and that's the, when stuff isn't forgiven is when you're showing me something, and they're like, "Well, why is Luke not showing up at the end?
Yeah.
Why is Yoda not kicking ass? Why is not every single Jedi that died?
Yeah.
Turning up."
Yeah.
To help. You've ruined the constraints.
Yeah.
And then you've got bits where, like, right in the beginning, Rey's doing training with Leia and she's jumping all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
And then she's in the fallen Death Star.
Yeah.
And she's struggling to make simple jumps.
Yeah.
She's like, and catching on. You're like, well, I know that she can jump about 10 miles.
Yeah.
Why is she now struggling?
And there probably is some form of Star Wars lore that tells us the answer to all these questions, but it's not in the film.
It's not in the film.
Now, I would call myself a big Star Wars fan. I know a little bit of the expanded universe, mostly from Wikipedia and stuff that I read, because I haven't got the time to devote or the inclination to devote to doing anything other than watching the films, right? So I'm a fan of the films, right? I'm a fan of Star Wars, and I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen...
And I've been a fan of it since I was, you know, very, very, very young, like 4 or 5 years old.
I've seen yellow lightsabers.
Right.
It's not my first time.
No.
But I haven't got a clue why she's got one.
No, okay.
Someone else will go like, oh, of course, it's this reason and this reason. But the general population watching it don't have that insight.
No, they don't. And all it takes is the odd line just to explain things, right?
Yeah. And I'm not talking about like this over-the-top telling and not showing.
No.
But you... Yeah,
the whole thing back to incompetence. So the whole thing is strange in that it's that the entire Skywalker saga, right, is a missed opportunity. You know, and we have to say again, in fairness, it's not like George Lucas is some kind of genius. Well, he is probably a genius, but like he's not like he hasn't made big errors, right? We've already, you know, the fact that Leia, you know, snogs Luke. And then turns out to be his sister in like a kid's film. You know, he's obviously a massive... No retconning of the story is ever going to be as bad as that, right? And the fact... So you've got all... You have got this even implanted in the original trilogy, right? But just generally thinking, okay, fair enough, the prequel trilogy, Phantom Menace, Attack of the Clones, Revenge of the Sith, I don't think are great. In fact, in many ways, I think they're fucking dreadful. Right? I mean, dreadful and look horrible. They hurt my eyes to glance at them, right? But they have got some great moments, as all the films have. And at the end of the day, you know, it did what it did, and you know, we've forgiven it and forgotten about it, right? But nevertheless, it's fucking hot. It's mostly horrible, right? But coming after now that you can't even get the original films as they were released because those stupid special editions were released, right? Now, thankfully, there is some, if I have any listeners, some listeners might be aware of the despecialised editions of the original trilogy. Now, I'm very lucky, I've still got the originals on VHS in widescreen, and I've seen two of the despecialised editions, and you weren't aware of them till today.
No.
And what they are is there's some I think it's either one guy or some people on online have reconstructed the original Star Wars without all the special edition shit, and done like a kind of remastered version of A New Hope, The Empire Strikes Back, and Return of the Jedi. And if people can do your own search and read into the specialised editions, they are fantastic. And just remind you how good the original films were, right? I saw a tweet today, which is what reminded me of it, by Caleb Horton, who is a writer and photographer, apparently. But Caleb Horton, he's got a blue tick on Twitter. Go and check him out. And he talks about watching the despecialized edition and how it's like seeing the movie for the first time after getting laser eye surgery, he describes it as. And he says this, it's monstrous what George Lucas did to his poor movie when talking about A New Hope. And I think that's it. And then, you know, and then we've got this second tweet from him that I retweeted. When you read about what the guy had to do to make it, he's talking about the despecialised editions, the archaeology alone, it all starts to feel comically unfair. You've got the most popular movie in the world, made by a bunch of mostly still alive normal people in California, is almost a lost film. That's what it's from. He describes it as amazing incompetence, that the original Star Wars is almost a lost movie, and I think that's utterly fair to say. The amazing incompetence of losing almost the original trilogy, of creating what is a CGI fucking horror show for the prequel trilogy, and then utterly gashing up the sequel trilogy in the way they have, is utter incompetence from what are the supposedly the most creative and best and filmmakers in the business, and the greatest marketing machine in the known universe, right? They fucked it up completely to the point where fans have to reconstruct the original films and can come up with better ideas, even if we do say so ourselves, than what these guys have done. And I can't describe it as anything other than utter incompetence. At the same time, as actually quite liking the film. I'm confused myself.
No,
do you know what I mean? I'm just utterly dumbfounded how it ever got to this stage.
Yeah, I mean, I think what's interesting is thinking of George Lucas being inspired by the likes of sort of pulp and Flash Gordon, yeah, and these different things to go out and make his own universe. And then, and it being brilliant, and probably, you know, going beyond his expectations, and then becoming, well, he became friends earlier, but with like Francis Ford Coppola, and yeah, having influences there, and having influences with, obviously, strong influences of Japanese films and Western, yeah, films, and bringing all that in. And then all of a sudden, it becomes, after sort of Indiana Jones and Jurassic Park, about this, look at what CGI can do. Look at, well, let's revisit, because my idea was this huge space opera, which it was, but my idea was even bigger. Now I'm going to stick it on. Mm-hmm. Like, literally, stick it over the top.
Mm-hmm.
And not done in a not where it needed to be, and not done because it was done for love or passion. It was done because I want to be known that I'm moving Industrial Light and Magic forward. And then the next trilogy is, technology is here, not quite, but technology is here. I want to be the first person to, I want people to go, wow, did you see this world he's created? In like almost a Blade Runner way, but not Blade Runner, because Blade Runner is, you know, its own thing. But look at this. This is incredible. But then the story's, well, A, the CGI isn't up to scratch.
Yeah.
And the story is appalling.
Yeah.
And then this new one, so Force Awakens has its issues, like I said earlier, just narrative being the same. But it does give you the same kind of, like, ooh,
yeah,
I'm excited. I'm revisiting the world.
I like the Force here. Awakens. I like the Force Awakens. I'm happy to say that.
Yeah. And then, yeah, we've spoken about the other two. But I do then think it becomes the machine and the cash and the, this is when the date of the film has to be. Not, take your time.
Yeah, yeah.
Make
yeah.
it as best as you can. So I think, first one, there's no issues with, because I'm making it for the love. If it comes out, it comes out. Yeah. Oh, it's better than expectations. Mm-hmm. Now I'm making it purely for computer reasons.
Yeah.
And now I'm making it... And when The Force Awakens came out, everyone was like, Disney's going to ruin Star Wars. Disney's going to destroy it. And then it came out and they went, no, they haven't. Like, the only thing that's a bit bad is that it's similar.
Yeah.
But like, it's similar I can live with.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And now I'm kind of going, oh, is it Disney's fault? But I mean, and I don't know when it comes to changing dates, but you do see that. Like, there's a Marvel film that was called The New Mutants.
Okay.
That was supposed to come out years ago. It's been pushed and pushed and pushed because it's not good enough. Now Disney have bought 20th Century Fox, and that's because it was Marvel, X-Men. It would finally will see the light of day. But it was finished about 4 years ago.
Interesting.
And it just wasn't up to scratch, so they keep working on it rather than disappoint. And I don't know why, if something's not good enough, you can't hold it back. It's not as though less people would have wanted to see this film. They would have gone, do you know what? I'll wait. It's going to be worth the... like. It's not like Apocalypse Now where I need 10 director's cuts every couple of months. Like, I'll wait until it's finished and ready. I'll have trust that you'll make a better film.
Yeah.
You know, Han Solo didn't seem to come out on time, and they knocked it to...
yeah.
May for whatever reason, which I then think was detrimental because it was starting to be this Christmas means like Harry Potter for a bit was Christmas means a Harry Potter film. Star Wars seemed to fill that that void for Force Awakens, Rogue One,
Last Jedi,
and then all of a sudden it was Han Solo in May. Yeah. Like, I'll move it round to Christmas. That would have been
fine. And they're not bad movies. Rogue One and Rogue One, Solo. I really like
cracking.
Yeah.
Like
we forgot to talk about those. Those are good movies.
They are great movies. Yeah, and Rogue One had its own production issues, where the guy who wrote it was the special effects guy on Star Wars and kind of came up with the idea, but then that gets taken off.
Yeah. And Solo, of course, had massive problems because Ron Howard,
Lord Miller, who did like the Lego movies and Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs and 21 Jump Street, and they were doing too much improv
for
Kathleen Kennedy's. Taste, so they get rid of her and bring Ron Howard, who again is that school like Spielberg, Lucas kind of school, and he brings a Star Wars film.
I thought that was good. Yeah. You know, I could very much watch. I've watched it a couple of times, and I enjoyed it both times. Looked like exactly right. It's like a Star Wars film, like a soccer 70s space adventure, it's like a Buck Rogers kind of movie. That's the type of thing that it is.
And had that come out at Christmas next year, we'd probably be seeing Solo 2.
Yeah, right.
Because it would have made the money needed. Darth Maul would have continued his journey.
Yeah, right.
Money was poor. Might not happen. Yeah. But you've got Rian Johnson, who's got a trilogy.
Yeah,
and you've got the guys who did Game of Thrones, and they've pulled out for whatever reason of doing their own.
Okay.
But The Mandalorian, which I've yet to watch,
I've not seen that.
Apparently is good.
Yeah.
And that's Jon Favreau.
Yeah.
And someone else is involved.
Yeah, I did look on the other night actually who was involved, but I'm not sure of that. But there's reasons to be, because we don't know. I mean, Rian Johnson, you know, with his own trilogy, might pull out something good. That'll be interesting where that's going to be set. So at least there's more coming out, and obviously this
a new hope.
This hope, this podcast has been a bit of a mostly it's been a bit of a rant, maybe not massively articulate from me certainly, but. I think it just, and I still know no clearer into how I feel about the film, really, than I simultaneously want to like it. But I have to say, there's massive question marks over it, and the whole thing seems weird in how it ended up. The sequel trilogy ended up quite as confusing and as polarizing as it does. I don't fully get it. It seems like a huge nightmare to me, but I may be wrong. And any criticism I've thrown out at the filmmakers, I'm sure that they were under constraints that they just couldn't do anything about. You know, because these people it's their job after all. But it just seems to be really strange how at a curse, even a cursory glance, the whole thing doesn't seem to make any sense on a narrative level. And how it got to that level, I don't know. How it got to that stage, I don't know. Will, thank you very much for coming in and listening to me, mostly listening to me.
Pleasure. I'm sorry, I couldn't bring more positive notes.
No. If you'd have told me you really loved the film, I think I would have liked it more.
Oh, no. I loved it. I can't wait to see it again.
It's too late now. It's too late now. Will, thanks very much.
Thank you, James.
So that was me discussing Star Wars The Rise of Skywalker with Will Hill. Of course, as soon as we switched the recorder off, myself and Will carried on talking, and we mentioned several things that we wish we'd have brought up during the actual recorded discussion, including the fact that we don't know why in Star Wars the human characters have to have ages that are equivalent to human age. So why aren't they 500 years old? Why isn't Boba Fett 500 years old? Why do you need Jango Fett in the prequels, for example? Why couldn't Obi-Wan Kenobi be 400 years old, 700 years old, like Yoda is 900 years old, etc., etc., etc.? But you have to draw a line somewhere. Anyway, I hope you enjoyed that. Thanks for listening. Newton Talks will return.